This is a Dubai Eye 103.8 podcast.
Hey, you're listening to the Bite Size Business Breakfast. Everything Richard, Tom and myself have been up to on Wednesday, May the 31st. And what we have done is had quite the conversation around newspaper publishing. All three of us started out in newspapers. Richard used to work for the Crewe Chronicle. Tom, the Daily Telegraph. I did my internships at university at the Independent on Sunday. So we all have a certain fondness for the printed word. We've got a little bit of newspaper ink on our hands. And so we were very, very interested in the news that both Gulf News and Khaleej Times are to stop publishing physical editions of their Saturday and Sunday newspapers. In the studio, in what was a really frank chat, a lot more information and detail than we expected, and we appreciate that, was Anshuman Joshi, who's the Director of Sales and Publishing for Al Nisa Publishing at Gulf News. We've also been counting down to tax day. That first day in the tax calendar is the 1st of June. So Wasim Shaheen, who's a partner and head of corporate tax at KPMG Lower Gulf, has been in telling us everything we need to know about corporate tax here in the UAE. And Tom's been looking at what the rise in the Russian population here in the UAE means for our startups and the funding they attract. That's with Triska Hammett of WAMDA. Where we're looking in more detail at one of those stories that's got all of Dubai talking this morning. The news that Gulf News, as well as Khaleej Times, are to stop publishing their physical newspapers on the weekend, their Saturday and Sunday editions. Very, very pleased to be joined in the studio by Anshuman Joshi, who is the Director of Sales and Publishing for Gulf News at Al Nisa Publishing. Anshuman, thank you so much for coming in.
Thank you for having me on the show. It's right in the morning, and we're talking about a very critical issue now.
We are, and we've had so many messages, Anshuman, you wouldn't believe it. So tell me, why are you doing this?
I mean, obviously, we didn't do this overnight. It has been in the making for a few years now. 2020 was the pivotal year, right? So that's when we realized that a lot of our readers actually moved on to digital from the print edition. And it was not something that we were seeing alone. I think all the traditional publishers have gone through that. So our decisions are essentially, like any other business, being dictated by three factors, right? So you have the consumers who have changed their preferences in the way they consume news, the immediacy, the engagement they require of the platforms. Then, of course, came the costs. 2020 meant that the costs for producing a newspaper went higher than ever before. The price of the newsprint shot up by almost 300%. The supply chain disruption meant that everything became so much more expensive, from transports to logistics. So while people were paying a particular amount to get the newspaper, the cost of producing the newspaper and delivering it to them became that much more prohibitive. But I think, and the third part of the entire discussion is the fact that the clients too, the advertisers, they became smarter in the way they wanted to utilize the advertising spends. I mean, they wanted more performance. Display wasn't a top of the mind, especially in the years following the pandemic. So when it came to all that, we realized that you could actually, and because of the surge in traffic that we've seen online on our digital platforms that went up to almost 600 million users on a yearly basis, we realized that it was easier and better to target them. So all these decisions were very important when it came to dictating how we actually decided what newspaper had to be in the future. So at this point of time, it is very important we strategically redeploy resources to give consumers what they want, give clients what they want, and make sure that the costs don't actually prohibit us from bringing out the newspaper.
Fascinating. So let's dig into those three points separately. Let's start with the customers, the first of your three C's there.
Yeah.
What have you actually seen happen to the readers? You talk about a 600% spike in online, but what's happened to the number of your physical readers? Can you let me know the percentage or the number that's fallen?
So during the pandemic, we saw a lot of people not wanting the newspaper. But then just now, this very year, and it sounds very funny, is that we actually increased our newspaper subscription, the physical one, by almost 10 to 15%. But that brought us to dilemma again. It raises our cost. The more the subscription rises, the more the costs go up. And because the costs go up and advertisers are not willing to pay that cost, it becomes more expensive. So the more popular that we get in print, the more expensive it is to actually bring out the newspaper now.
Do advertisers not want print advertisements anymore?
They do want print advertising, but a lot of them also want performance. Now, it's about owning your audience. When I say owning the audience, it's easier to own your audience on digital, right? You could actually track everything. Even the clients know how to track their business. On the newspaper, though, it's a very discerning clientele now. So you could target them, but we need to be able to do it right, which is when we say that we are going to redeploy resources. It is not because we intend doing away with print. It's about us re-strategizing our priorities for even print, to remodel it, to get more consumer attention, to be able to own our consumers, to be able to target them better.
Are the amounts that you are charging for online advertisements lower than the print because of the different costs?
And that is pretty much true. Yes, the digital advertising is cheaper. Even at this point of time, as we say, for the newspaper industry globally, the print revenues still are outdoing the digital revenues. So if we are making about $120 billion globally on newspaper advertising at this point of time, for the newspaper digital market, that figure is still around at 40 odd billion, sorry. So you see, there is a lot of catching up to do even as far as digital revenues are concerned. And that is essentially because the digital industry, as far as the newspapers are concerned, haven't really been able to target the consumers the way it should be. We have found engagement, but we haven't been able to target them as well.
What's the difference between a physical ad in the Gulf News and an online ad with the Gulf News, percentage-wise?
I'm sorry, could you please read that?
What's the difference in cost to place an ad with your print edition or online?
It's almost 50% more. So the print ad is almost 50% more expensive than the digital advert.
Okay, so your advertisers are moving to digital. Talk to me about the costs of delivering that last C there. You said they've gone up. Which bits of them have actually risen?
Almost all parts of this thing. We have to understand that in terms for the newspaper, they're two very expensive propositions, right? Making content is very, very expensive today because the requirement of the kind of content, the kind of localization of content that you need, the kind of people that you need to deploy in the field is very, very expensive. The newsprint itself, as I said, 300%. That's how much it's gone up by. Ink, the transportation cost. And in 2020, we were forced to buy a lot of inventory because there was the disruption supply chain meant that we were not getting the stock on time. So we had to buy a lot of it. Now that stock sits with us and we've bought it at a very expensive price. And I think that's no different for any traditional publisher in this market.
So why take just the weekend papers digitally? Why not all of them?
Because in Europe, for instance, you would see that Tuesday is probably the lowest performing day as far as advertising goes. For us, it's Saturday and Sunday. So the weekend edition was a natural choice.
Could we see all of them go digital?
No, it will not go completely digital. I think the newspaper in the print format will actually survive. We are going to see a complete transformation of as to how we actually bring out the print newspaper. And I think there are ways by which we can actually own our audiences, even in print. So I don't think newsprint is going to go away. Newspapers are not going to go away, not at least not in the next couple of years.
How are you going to change the print edition?
Well, I suppose it's the newspaper is a generic product at this point of time, right? So if you've seen the newspapers in the UAE and they have been catering to all kinds of consumers, we really don't know who's reading the newspaper today. I mean, we do understand in terms of spends, the kind of people that actually buy our newspapers. We know they are upper middle class. But when it comes to pinpointing your audiences by saying exact deliveries, we don't have that. And I think Dubai as a market, or the UAE as a market, has actually quite matured in the last 5 or 10 years. It's become very intelligent. It needs a particular, it needs a different sort of content to be actually catered to. And that's exactly what we're focusing on.
Well, we're going to get more from Anshuman Joshi, the Director of Sales and Publishing for Gulf News at Al Nisa Publishing, who has very gamely stepped into our studio this morning to talk us through the business case behind the decision to take away the print editions of the Saturday and Sunday newspapers for Gulf News. So many questions coming in for you, Anshuman. I'm going to keep you in the studio for another segment.
This is the Bite Size Business Breakfast, exclusively on DubaiEye1038.com.
We're here on Dubai Eye this morning. We are digging into one of the stories that has certainly got people talking this morning. The news that Golf News and the Khaleej Times are to stop publishing their Saturday and Sunday editions, the physical papers, and just offer online versions instead. We are very pleased to keep in the studio Anshuman Joshi, who's the Director of Sales and Publishing for Golf News at Al Nessa Publishing. Anshuman, thank you so much for staying with us.
Thank you so much for having me.
And you can tell the level of interest by the level of messages that we are getting in. Khaleej Times has also said the same as you. They've said that they're going to stop those physical editions of Saturday and Sunday. Is this a coordinated move between the two? Are there discussions?
You know, traditional rivalries in the publishing space, they've changed, right? For newspapers like us, for publishing businesses like us, we do not have to deal with each other exclusively anymore. We are not rivals in that sense. I mean, we are rivals in business, but a lot of the concerns, a lot of the problems associated with doing business are almost same. So, yes, we have been talking. We have been conversing with them, but it's on several things. And it's happened over the years about the kind of things that we want to do and what they want to do. Is there some sort of commonality in there? I suspect that in the time that follows, our scope of collaboration with not just Khaleej Times, but with other newspapers in the region will also grow, because we are pretty much all of us in the same boat when it comes to revenues, to businesses, to distribution, and we are losing ground to the new age social media, right? And while it's easier and cheaper to actually produce all that content for social media, and there is no absolute fact-checking there or veracity, and we don't even know whether it's true, to be able to run a newspaper operation, to be able to run a publishing operation is far more expensive. So if we do not come together, I mean, all the parties, all the publishing houses in this region, we are going to be up for very, very challenging times.
What could coming together look like? How close could you get?
I mean, at this point of time, we've decided that most of us would drop the newspaper edition on Saturday and Sunday. Tomorrow, if more newspapers join in, and we could pretty much coordinate how we're going to deal with clients, how we're going to deal with our distribution, how we're going to deal with a cost related to printing, for instance. So all the options are there on the table. And it's not just for Khaleej Times and Gulf News to decide. I think it's a predicament that's faced by the Arabic newspapers as well. So you have so many newspapers here going through the same kind of crisis. We have worked for years to build our audiences. We have spent tons of money doing what we do. And we know that people can't really do without us. And we need to make sure we are able to monetize our audiences in the right way. So it would mean that cooperation could actually go up. It could develop a multifold, not just with Khaleej Times, but with all the publishers in the region. And when I say region, I'm not even talking about just the UAE alone. We are talking about the GCC market in general.
What does the move away from physical weekend papers mean for your journalists? Will you be making redundancies?
No, we are not making redundancies, because I think we've already done our line of redundancies in the last couple of years. What we are doing, as I said in my note, is that we're going to redeploy these resources. I mean, why should we spend so much time producing an edition which a lot of advertisers are not buying? The readers are buying it, but the advertisers are not buying it. So if we were to take those resources and deploy them strategically across our print editions on the remaining 5 days and on the digital platform, we will create larger engagement with our audiences, and we can actually create a lot of products that we don't have in a stable right now.
Anshuman, so many questions coming in from our listeners. Rapid fire, quick question, quick answer. What is the daily circulation of the typical UAE newspaper is what Guy is asking.
Well, you see, auditing of newspapers actually stopped some time back. We were the last newspaper to be audited in this region from a publisher point of view. I can't say much for other newspapers, but on a daily basis, we reach about 400,000 readers on a daily basis,
In the physical copy?
In the physical copy. So essentially, readership is a multiplication of the number of copies with four. So we are talking about between 70,000 to 100,000 copies every day.
We've got someone asking as well, what happens to their subscription? If they've paid for the print edition for 365 days a year, will you be compensating those people?
We will definitely be compensating them in some form. I mean, we have not really decided exactly how, but we are working out on strategies. I mean, our consumers are very, very important to us. We do not want them to feel shortchanged about what we have done. And I suspect they shouldn't feel shortchanged, because we have a digital format where we are actually building up a lot of content that they can consume. I mean, it's just about engagement, right? If you go to our online platforms at this point of time, you will understand that it's not just about news alone.
Very quickly, what will happen to the paywall and the subscription that you charge for Golf News with the weekend editions there? Will it rise?
At this point of time, we have not really decided as to how the subscription patterns would change in terms of costs. But we do expect a lot of consumers actually flowing into our digital format now. And the costs of production will essentially remain the same, because the stocks have been bought and they need to be sold out.
Did the new weekend have any impact on your numbers and the rest of it for these weekend papers?
I would say it was. I would not say it was not without its impact, but I wouldn't actually significantly say, I would not say it had a significant impact. I mean, we've seen the way clients, our consumers, are moving, so it's something that's no surprise to us.
Anshuman Joshi is Director of Sales and Publishing for Golf News at Alnisa Publishing, in the studio to talk to us about the fact that Golf News, as well as College Times, will be getting rid of the physical editions of their weekend papers, the Saturday and the Sunday editions, and just offering them online. Thank you so much for talking to us this morning.
It's been a pleasure being here. Thank you.
Thank you also for all of your messages and all of your brilliant questions.
Yeah, and it's, you know, we've been here a while. Your favourite newspaper, whatever it may be, when 7 days shut down, we got a lot of messages. So, yeah, we care about these things, and I'm glad we do.
And we do indeed, and we've all got a bit of newspaper ink on our hands here in the studio, haven't we?
Newspaper and magazine ink on our hands.
Catch up on the business headlines with the Bite-Sized Business Breakfast.
16 hours, 38 minutes and 14 seconds until we get corporate tax here in the UAE. The clock is ticking. Joining us in the studio now to give you some free advice is the head of corporate tax at one of the big four here in Dubai. He is a partner and head of corporate tax at KPMG for the Lower Gulf, Wasim Shaheen. Thank you very much indeed for joining us.
Thank you for hosting me.
Okay, so it's 30 years since you moved to the UAE and first worked here. Did you ever think this day would come, corporate profit tax?
Not at all. I had no... I wouldn't dream one day to see UAE adopting corporate tax. I haven't seen it coming.
Okay, but here's what's happening. So from tomorrow, 1st of June, corporate tax kicks in. 9% profit tax. What, we don't know everything, but what do we know about who's going to have to pay it and who might be exempt?
Look, I mean, yes, a lot of you know, material have been issued. The law has been released. The ministerial decisions have been, step by step being released by the ministry. Cabinet decisions are also released. A lot of things are known in the market. However, there is still some confusion about how they adopt, who is taxable, who is not taxable. But still, I think slowly things are moving in the right direction, and people are starting to know more about it. I just want to summarize. You have most of the companies in the UAE will be taxable. Some of them will be taxable at 0%. Some of them will be taxable at 9%. And the multinational enterprises will be subject to 15%. And that's something that people should know, that the multinational enterprise, they fall under what we call BEPS 2.0. They are subject to 15% tax. So we have three rates, actually, in the UAE. Now, there are a few exemptions. The UAE adopted a worldwide tax income, and they have only a few exemptions, actually. And mostly the government entities, the government-related entities, the companies owned by the government are exempt. Some investment funds are exempt, and so on and so forth. But the exempt list is very, very minimal in this country.
Okay, so most people will have to pay. One of the big questions is free zone companies, because we have tens of thousands of them. We're sitting in one now. If you look behind me, Wasim, you can see we're in a free zone here by about 15 metres. If we if we were across the road, we wouldn't be in a free zone, but we are. We're in Media City or Knowledge Park. We're kind of on the cusp of the two. Still, we're getting questions in from our listeners. I work in a free zone. I was told when I signed up, 50 years exemption from tax. So what do we know about that?
Look, I mean, this issue of free zone is very, very controversial. Let's simplify it. At the end of the day, any tax that comes into effect has to have neutrality, has to have transparency, has to have equality between people. So for those people who perform work in the mainland, in principle, they should be equal and they should pay the 9% tax or the 15% if they are multinational. For those people who perform free zone activities and they are in the free zone but performing activities outside the country or between the free zones, in principle, they should be subject to tax at 0%. So the free zone is definitely, the ministerial decree is not yet issued. There are a lot of talks and studies about that. And at the end of the day, the UAE government has committed to honor the exemption or to honor the 0%, if you want, taxation, but provided that these free zones will perform free zone activities. Now, nothing much has been released so far, I would say, but the ministry, I know that the ministry, they are working very, very hard on, you know, releasing detailed analysis about the free zones and how they are, you know, subject to tax or exempt from tax, or what are the passive income, what are the qualified income, what is the unqualified income. But so far, we know that they will honor at least what they have signed for.
Okay. What kind of questions are you getting asked by your clients, which will be medium-sized to large corporates? You don't have a big four auditor unless you're a reasonably big company. You're head of corporate tax at one of the big four. Your phone must be ringing off the hook. What are the main questions you're getting asked?
You're right. We're not sleeping, actually. We're working 18 hours a day. Look, I mean, it depends on the size of the business, depending on whether it is a natural person or a juridical person, small to medium enterprise or a large enterprise. Everyone has his own concern about, first of all, they want to know how the system works, how the corporate tax introduction will be there, what systems they have to change in their, you know, in their operations, in their IT, etc., etc. So tons of questions, left, right, and center. First of all, inquisitive answers. They want to see how this will impact them, how they will impact their operations, how this will impact their doing business. So, but let's not forget that at the end of the day, all the countries in the world, 180 countries in the world, they adopt corporate tax. So it's not something new that the UAE is introducing. And everyone comes from different country where corporate tax is adopted. The UAE has done a very, you know, a fantastic job putting the law into, if you want, the international standards, the top international standards. And this is what, you know, what's making the adoption of this UAE corporate tax law as being as, if you want, easy as possible, and the burden on the commercial entities as low as possible.
So tomorrow, 1st of June, is when it starts. But most companies have a Gregorian calendar year, financial year. So if your financial year is 1st of January to December 31st, it doesn't kick in, does it, till the 1st of January next year?
You're absolutely right. I mean, 1st of June is another day for most of the companies. Everybody is now watching, doing income tax assessment, etc. But most of the companies in the UAE, they will not be affected by the tax until 1st January. So the first tax declaration that they have to make is 30 September 2025. So it's a relatively far from now. All they have to do now is to prepare themselves and do income tax assessment to see how this, you know, this will affect their operations, their net profitability, their cash flow, and so on and so forth. But from 1st June to 31 December, very few companies will be affected.
Okay, fine. So what advice can you give to small businesses? Sure, if you're an Emirates airline or an MR Properties or an Emirates MBD, you've got a big four audit firm, you've been working on this for a while, you've got A-list advisors like you. happy days. But a lot of people driving to work this morning listening to this or watching at home on their sofa won't have the luxury of that. They're small business owners. What advice can you give to them?
Yeah, first of all, the first advice, I listen to Dubai every morning, actually. The first advice I give is, first of all, let's not panic. It's a very simple corporate tax introduction on SMEs. First of all, natural people, there is a threshold of 1 million revenues per year. Let's suppose you're in cash 1 million and below, you are out of scope. So you don't even enter into the network of the corporate tax. Then if you have a business up to 3 million revenues, you can maintain your books on cash basis. So cash in, cash out, it's a small Excel sheet that you can maintain and you can file your taxes.
20 seconds left, yeah. Wasim. Yes. Final thought?
Yeah. Final thoughts, yeah, this is a new thing. Everybody is worried about the corporate tax, but my advice is let's relax, let's simplify things. The law is extremely, extremely advanced, state of the art that the UAE is.
Wasim, we're out of time, going to leave it there. Wasim Shaheen of KPMG, appreciate your time this morning.
My pleasure, thank you.
Just the highlights. This is the Bite Size Business Breakfast.
Let's turn our attention to the startup landscape here in the UAE. It is obviously a sector that has been booming in recent years. One organization that knows that all too well is WAMDA. They accelerate entrepreneurship ecosystems across the Middle East and North Africa through sector agnostic investments through their vehicle at WAMDA Capital. From WAMDA, we are now joined by Triska Hamid, who has penned an article on the WAMDA website about the boom in Russian startups and the Russian startup ecosystem here in Dubai. Tell us more about that boom. Triska joins us live on the line and live, happy to say, via Microsoft Teams. Morning to you, Triska.
Good morning.
So obviously we have seen investment from Russia here into the region in the past. In fact, certain centres for digital innovation were set up between the UAE and Russia several years ago. I suppose I've got to ask the simplistic question first and foremost. How much of a boom have we seen in the last year and a half?
So we've seen bilateral trade between the UAE and Russia increase exponentially. Last year, trade between the two countries grew to $9 billion. That's up 68% in just 1 year alone. With regards to the startups, it's difficult to quantify exactly how many have relocated here and how much investment they've brought here. One thing about the Russian community is they haven't fully integrated themselves into the local ecosystem. So we don't hear about all the deals that happen from the Russian investors. But we feel the impact when we go to events, when we look at generally the new technologies that have been brought over with them.
Just looking at from an economic point of view. Yeah, you're right there as well. It's difficult to sort of quantify the figures at the moment, but anecdotally, we're seeing a significant impact in the real estate market, and a lot of people suggesting that's because of the huge numbers of Russians and Ukrainians coming into the market as well. Something in that?
Yes. So Russians accounted for the biggest number of transactions in the real estate market last year. I think we all felt it. Anyone who lives in Dubai felt the rise in property prices. With regards to startups specifically, we've seen a lot of, the Russians that moved over here, they came with their businesses. So we've seen Russian restaurants open and also the startups basically brought their businesses over. The founders relocated here and they've been able to continue with their businesses from here. The majority of them relocated their staff and their engineers and their developers to other countries around the world that are cheaper to set up base, like Armenia, like Turkey, like Kazakhstan. But we find that a lot of the founders and a lot of the higher level managers are based in Dubai and in some other cities in the UAE as well.
So in terms of those, a lot of those businesses, they were established businesses, so portals into and dealing with a Russian market that are now, moving HQs to the UAE?
That's exactly what's happening. So a lot of them have maintained a presence in Russia to cater to the Russian market and the Russian-speaking market. And because of the sanctions around the world, they haven't been able to trade and continue doing business with other markets. Now in the UAE hasn't imposed any sanctions on Russia. So Russians can come here freely, set up base here, set up their HQs here. So what we're seeing is now they're splitting their entities into two. One to focus on the Russian market, one to focus on the rest of the world as a UAE entity.
So that's interesting. So obviously UAE is a gateway to their domestic market, but has that also prompted many to look at the opportunities of taking their services and their offerings to a wider market?
They have, although the majority haven't really looked at the Middle East as an opportunity. It is basically a change in address for them primarily. There are some Russian startups and investors who are looking at the region, who are looking at using UAE as a base for the wider Middle East. So there are startups that are exploring, and they're bringing with them their own technologies. Russian technology is one of the more superior in the world. They're on par with US, Indian technologies, Chinese technologies. So there's a chance that we can, from in the region, benefit from that. And we're seeing that sort of competition play out in the UAE, where you've got technologies from all around the world readily available here, which is something you don't really see in other markets around the world.
And one assumes you're also getting funding as well. If you've got Russian founders coming over, maybe before that they hadn't considered founding or investing into other opportunities. Are we seeing a sort of bleed from Russian founders and funding into other startups?
I think it will come. So far, the Russian investors who have relocated here are focusing on the Russian founders that are here. And these Russian founders tend to be in the crypto space, in Web3, in the metaverse, in AI. There are just a handful of Russian investors who are looking at the wider market and looking at deals based in the Middle East. Although, as of now, I think we can maybe count one or two UAE-based or Middle East-based startups that have benefited from Russian funding. It has been primarily Russian founders that are benefiting from Russian investment money.
But no doubt that there is an increase in tech talent coming into the region.
There is, but like I said before, most of the engineers and the software developers are based outside. It's the founders that are here. If, you know, as time goes on, we may see more Russian tech talent come. But, you know, the chief technology officers are also based here. So I think it's really only a matter of time before we see more collaboration between the two communities.
I've got about 30 seconds remaining, Triska. Biggest challenges moving forward?
For the startup sector in general?
Yeah.
Raising investment. And I think perhaps that's where the Russian money can help some of these startups in the region.
Triska, appreciate the article. Made for a fascinating read. Thank you very much indeed for the insight and for the evidence as well. Triska Hamid joining us live on the show to talk about an article that she's penned on the Wednesday website, which is available for all, to buy now home to hundreds of Russian startups and investors. And we're slowly starting to see their impact on the regional startup landscape. So it makes for a great read. And a big thanks to Triska for joining us live on the Business Breakfast this morning.
You've been listening to a Dubai Eye 103.8 podcast. To enjoy lots more from Dubai Eye in the United Arab Emirates, just go to dubaieye1038.com or find them wherever you normally get your podcasts.